Blog Talk Radio.
Conservative Talk Radio. My name is Tracy.
And I'm just plain Bill.
Sliding in underneath the
tie. Oh, man.
Sucked it in. Boy, if we were in the same room, the door would have been slamming as I started.
I know. God, I got right in at the end of the bumper music.
All right, people. Bill, how are you?
I am doing well. It's a bright, sunny day out, a little cool, breeze isn't blowing too bad, and I'm pissed.
Why?
I'm pissed because there is a contingent of conservatives, theoretical, nominal conservatives, that somehow have the idea that rhinos and squishes are just fine. And I'm tired of that. I am not ever, never, ever voting again for the lesser of two evils. Not going to do it. Period.
You know, that is certainly the point of view, I think, of a very significant minority.
Yep.
Core minority. I think it's a core minority. Maybe even a vocal core minority of conservatives.
Absolutely.
A lot of the other ones think that they're just being pragmatic, that they're just thinking that, you know, it's the way politics is. And you're right. It's like, God, how stupid do you think? Oh, well, apparently they think we're stupid because we are.
Sometimes we are. I think that's ending. I mean, but here's the latest clap.
Yep.
Chuck DeVore is the actual conservative that is vying for the Republican nominee to unseat Boxer. Now, that is a winnable race.
Easily.
When you poll all three of the Republicans against Boxer, they are all within 3 to 4 points of her. Okay? Just so everybody knows.
In a traditionally liberal running, statewide liberal running state.
Absolutely. So now we're getting people, and Sarah Palin just came out just 2 days ago and endorsed Carly Fiorina. Carly Fiorina used to be, before she got fired, the head of Hewlett-Packard. And she got fired for a variety of reasons. I mean,
she also, and I think it's important, and it's probably an important reason why Palin did it, although I don't agree with her doing it.
Yep.
I agreed with her doing it with McCain. I'm sorry, I don't care how many people said, there was no way in hell she could do anything but go for McCain.
Exactly.
That was there. I'm less willing to concede that issue with Carly. For those who don't know, she was a major player in McCain's campaign.
Yes.
But I think
she was a financial advisor, as a matter of fact.
I think most of those positions are figureheads at best.
Yeah, probably.
I'm certain she got to know Carly very well. You know, she became friends, and that creates all kinds of problems in that area. you know, I'm willing to, let me rephrase that. I'm careful. I'm not willing to cut her some slack.
Nope.
Okay, on the Carly endorsement.
Nope,
however,
not a bit.
However,
yeah,
the outward hatred that is just spilled on her, you know, because of this, just doesn't make sense to me for two reasons.
Okay.
One, besides the fact that Palin is not a candidate, she's a private
or anything.
Citizen.
Right, that's right.
She's a private citizen. She is not the leader of the conservative movement, nor even the Tea Party.
I think in her mind she is a leader in the Tea Party.
I think she wants to be a leader in the Tea Party, but
okay.
You know, as much as, and I've grown in this particular point of view, as much as everybody knows here, I've been saying this from practically day one, I have a problem with the Tea Party because they are a disorganized mess.
Mm-hmm.
There is no coordination of their effort or message. It is a pure grassroots thing, and there's nothing that is pulling them together at all.
Yep.
I'm beginning to believe, in my own personal opinion, that I like the idea that there are probably 150, maybe 200 tea parties
yes.
in this country. And, you know, there are three or four big ones in big states that have big urban areas, and there's one or two in states that are smaller and such like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're tending to focus in on local races and state races. And you and I, as, you know, founding members of the American Conservative Party, absolutely love that.
Yeah, absolutely. You betcha. I mean, that's
so,
where it all,
you know,
starts. It's where it's happening, folks.
And so I actually think Sarah Palin gets it. I think she'd like to be, I think she'd like to be the honorary, I was going to say mascot, but that's probably not right. The honorary, you know, matriarch of the Tea Parties. You know, someone that,
mm-hmm.
you know, is a real big champion of the Tea Parties, but absolutely doesn't do anything more than, you know, nod her head and smile at a party.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, if she could be the most welcome participant at a Tea Party event, okay, that says, thank you very much for coming, enjoy the dinner, by the way, we got the business to take care of, so bye, you know,
mm-hmm.
I think that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fine.
Oh, yeah.
So, one, you know, she's not a candidate for anything. She's not, she might be a, you know, de facto leader. She's certainly not a leader of either the movement or the Tea Party.
Nope.
So that's one. And two, you know, we are not fucking liberals. We don't have idol worship. We don't
that's
need
exactly right.
a leader telling us what to do and think. So we're not
it's
monolithic
perfect.
Thinkers. If Sarah Palin wants to endorse Carly Fiorina because she likes her and gets along with her and she thinks she'd be a really nice person and senator, okay. No reason to throw her under the bus. No reason to, you know. I saw more hate for Sarah Palin over the last 4 days from conservatives than I've seen from the liberals. That's
well,
not.
I will.
You know what? You can withhold your vote if and when she runs for something that you can vote for her for. Because
you can say,
well, you know, she voted for a rhino, so she endorsed the rhino. Yeah, can do that. I think that's perfect.
I
think
no.
anybody that actually does that compared to anybody else that she's running against is an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Tracy, here's the deal. Sarah Palin holds herself out to be a non-politician politician. She holds herself out to be a rogue. She holds herself out to be this person that supports a conservative point of view, regardless of where that may leave and lead.
Politically or personally?
Personally. But that's what her book is about.
Okay.
So when she does that, and then she comes out and acts like a typical politician, I have an issue.
Okay. I think it's perfectly reasonable to have an issue with her.
And I will call her out on that issue. That is not hate.
I certainly don't think that it's wrong to say, and as a matter of fact, I did it. I did it on her Facebook page.
Yep.
I did it on Twitter. I went, really? That's your pick? Really? Okay, personal choice. I understand.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I put basically on both two places. Was, didn't get it. I kind of understand it in an offbeat way. But from a political point of view, it was a bad choice.
Yeah.
Certainly a bad choice. It was a bad choice, simply by the reaction of people.
Well, sure. To the point that she felt she had to respond again. The problem is, I don't think that she vetted her very well. I mean, I think you can go back into Carly Fiorino's record and say, you know what? She's flipped on a lot of things. She, from my point of view, and I suspect probably yours, set up a what is basically a dummy corporation in order to sell technology to Iran. Now, that ain't right. I don't care what corporation you're working for. You don't do that.
This is my opinion as far as her and her business history.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I stopped paying a whole lot of attention to her about 6 months after the Compact acquisition. Okay. Not because I stopped paying attention to her, but because I was so tired of the invective that was being sent her way. I frankly thought it was a really good deal. It sucked for, a whole lot of people, but from a business point of view, I thought it was a really good idea. My perception of Compact and HP was both of them had half of the business, and they were both dying. HB took the best of the both businesses and actually put something together that actually worked. Now, I think she ran it exceedingly badly based on what happened after that. But there was so much crap about the choice, I thought it was a pretty smart move. It wasn't executed at all. I mean, I kind of, she's kind of Bush in Iraq. I absolutely thought going into Iraq was a brilliant idea. And it was executed wonderfully. And then, Bush said, "Okay, you guys take care of it. I'll see you later." And then the whole thing fell apart in pieces because it was just run, just really stupidly run. I think that's what happened to her and HB and Compact. I think it was a brilliant move executed. She caught everybody off guard. It accomplished it, and then I think she listened to her press, or I don't know what happened. Maybe it was never in her to be able to run something like that, But
yeah.
Once it was done, I think it got all screwed up, and that's my problem, because that's what we want in an executive, is to be able to come up with those brilliant ideas and then execute them. Now, she's not running for an executive position. She's running for a committee position. From that point of view, she's a diva. There's no doubt about it. She's a diva. It absolutely went to her head. I think she was brilliant. I think she went to her head. She became, an egotistical, arrogant diva. And I got no use for her. I would not vote for her. I would vote for DeVore simply because, across the board, I don't have anything to worry about him. Whether Palin failed to vet her or not, or whether it was purely a a personal issue or not, at this particular point, she's going to have to live it down.
I don't think it was a personal issue. I mean, this Carly Fiorina is the person who said that Sarah Palin couldn't run a company. I mean, I don't think it was personal. I think she made a political calculation, and I think it backfired on her, as well it should have. So, from that point of view, her endorsement, for whatever that means, was kind of a stupid political calculation. I mean, it wasn't smart politics.
And it did nothing for Carly.
It doesn't seem to have. And in fact, Carly is still going down. I mean, she was 3.7% down in her polling after that. So
I think the majority of Tea Party people, the core conservative people that you and I were just talking about,
right.
I think they're gonna do exactly what we would expect them to do. Yeah, thanks for that, and go on your merry way.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
I don't think That's it.
What?
Oh, brilliant insight.
An epiphany.
It's not go really that far.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. I think it's probably right. I think people are beginning to look at political endorsements not as a suggestion of who you should vote for,
mm-hmm.
but rather as an indicator of how that person is thinking.
Hmm.
In other words, nobody's actually going to do what Sarah Palin, is doing by endorsing Carly. People go, oh, well, Sarah, endorsed Carly, so we're going to vote for Carly. I don't think anybody's going to do that. I think the whole foundation of the Tea Party core conservative movement at this point is individualism. We're not going to follow the herd. We're going to make that decision on ourselves. So I think that might be the issue, is people are kind of going, yeah, okay, what does this say about Sarah Palin? Not Carly. What does this say about Sarah Palin? I think that's where these endorsements are beginning to go. It's not who they're endorsing. It's how does this, reflect on the endorser? Bill?
Has a record of endorsing, I don't know, I hesitate to use the word maverick because that's got all kinds of connotations to it now, but at least endorsing conservatives that are running against actual entrenched incumbents. So would you apply that same thing to him?
You're talking about, you broke up there, so are you talking about DeMint?
Yeah.
Gee, how did I know that?
I don't know.
I missed the whole 15 seconds in there,
basically, Jim DeMint is endorsing people that, conservatives that are running against entrenched incumbents.
No, you know who DeMint seems to be endorsing?
Mm.
And this is going to sound maybe, I don't think I'm saying anything different than you are. I really
don't. Okay.
I think he's endorsing people that he wants to see in Congress that he can work with.
Mm, okay.
Of course of the year, we may see that flesh itself out. I don't know. I haven't, for exactly the reason I just suggested on the brilliant observation, I haven't paid much attention to who Jim DeMint is endorsing.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay.
First of all, he's got, you know, he's endorsing. Okay, well, that's nice. Is he giving money? I'm assuming that the endorsement comes with money. That's nice. Okay,
uh-huh.
But, you know, first of all, most of the people that he's endorsing have nothing to do with me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not
mm-hmm.
voting for any of those people, so it tends to be irrelevant. I'm a little bit more interested in the California one only because come November, I'll probably be voting in California.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not going to be voting
yeah.
in the primaries. I'm not going to be set up before then.
Huh.
And I don't know if California is a primary voter requirement first. There's a couple states where if you're not registered in the primary, you can't vote in the general.
I don't believe that that's true in California.
I don't think so either, because I was at one time registered to vote in California many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we've got we've used up 20 minutes.
Oh God!
I even,
okay, I had
even,
that rant in me.
That was all right. I think it was a perfectly good rant. But I didn't have Sarah Palin on my list of things to talk about today.
Oh really? Well, actually, I'm Sarah is peripheral to my rant. I'm, you know, she's peripheral in terms of okay, she endorsed him. I think that was a huge mistake, but only in the context of who's the actual conservative in California. And she did not endorse
that.
So that was my only real reference to Sarah.
Well, I think you're obviously much closer to the particular situation to begin with.
Yeah. Well, that's
so
true.
I understand that.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
So the first thing that I had on, this has been going on a while, we didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about it, and I actually didn't put down the other side to this, and we'll get into it. The oil spill.
Oh, yeah, BP's,
you know,
well.
We had a little bit of conversation about it last week, not a whole lot that I recall. I think we were talking about the idea where somebody said it's going to get politics, and I went, why? Why should we be dealing with the premise that it is? It's obviously getting traction in the left, but I don't think it's getting much traction in the right as far as an argument for or against drilling. I think most people on the right are going, yeah, right, yeah, and ignoring the stupidity that's coming out of the left that I heard it today. Somebody said this was an exploratory well, so we can't even do exploratory drilling in waters, you know, off the coast of the United States anymore.
Hmm.
And I'm sitting like going, okay, who is this moron that's talking?
Yeah,
you know,
really.
Because unless he's walking everywhere, you know, there's a whole lot of car accidents going on that he needs to be aware of.
Oh, yeah, and plane crashes and all kinds of stuff.
And apparently, we shouldn't be building around rivers anymore. You know, or
really?
Where it rains really heavy. We shouldn't be building where it rains really heavy.
Okay, fine.
Anyways, this you know, so what is the political fallout of the oil spill? I still think it's way too early to deal with that.
That's true.
I think it's way too early to deal with that. I think the left wants to make it an argument on environmentalism, and I think most people are going, yeah, forget you. We'll see what the damage is before we have any decision about that. You know, economic fallout, you know, here's what's really rather interesting about that. So far, the only economic fallout that I've heard about is that the sport fishing industry in parts of Texas and Louisiana have been hit pretty hard with cancellations.
Well, there's also been some closure of oyster beds.
Okay. So, as an event, an economic event, we're not talking about anything that's really significant except for to BP and its cohorts.
Yes. I mean,
and by cohorts, I mean
price of crude has come down.
Price of crude has come down.
Yeah.
The stocks of the oil, the integrated oil businesses has taken a little bit of a hit, but not anything big.
Yeah, and that's probably just general market action.
Right. So, you know, on an economic basis, BP has lost. You know, BP is going to lose, you know, easily $15 or $25 billion out of this. You know, it might stretch up to about $30 billion.
Maybe not.
Right now, $30 billion would be a rounding error for the last 10 years worth of profits.
Well, yeah, maybe, but I'm thinking more along the lines of the rig was leased from a South Korean firm. They supplied the technicians, the technology, and operated that drilling rig.
Right.
So my guess is BP probably lays those, whatever the damage claims may be, and I'm not disputing your number, I'm just saying I suspect strongly that BP lays that off to them. Saying, hey, we weren't the operator, wasn't our technology, wasn't any of that. We may have some culpability, but in reality, that devolves back onto the business that supplied all of that. So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. At this particular point in time, I mean, I expect that there's going to be some Gulf Coast damage.
Yep.
It's kind of hard
not
for it to happen.
Yep.
You know what it really needs at this point?
Mm.
What we really need is a good Cat 4 popping into the Gulf.
Incidentally, we've got a question from Louisa Ma, who's saying that the
how much oil is lost?
No, do we think that O might be co-responsible? I don't think he is co-responsible. I think that the cleanup efforts could have been much swifter. I think the fact that Homeland Security, and apparently that's the jurisdiction that this falls under, not having fire booms available when the protocol clearly called for those to be available is at least some level of responsibility. But in terms of Obama himself, I don't think so. This has been kind of likened to Obama's Katrina. In some respects, that's true in terms of the response or lack thereof. But I'm not sure that's going to gain any traction.
Well, you know, it's not going to get any traction because the mainstream media is not going to give it.
Well, that's true. Exactly.
You know, I think Obama is as culpable for this as Bush was for Katrina.
Yep.
And that is zero.
Exactly.
Zero.
That's not the narrative, but that's the actual facts. Yes.
Yeah. Is the Obama administration culpable for failure to be ready to do? Yeah, but, you know, that goes down the line pretty far into the bureaucrats. And frankly, you know, bureaucrats, you know, probably nickel and dime this to death on the premise that we just don't have big rig fires like this. You know,
we don't. Not usually.
You know, we may get the rig, might get torn off the moorings because of a hurricane or something like that, damage with that. But, you know, for the most part, we just don't get this type of, you know, accident on the rigs. And as far as the amount of oil that's spilled, the number I heard was 200 million gallons at this point.
Okay.
That's remember, we're talking somewhere in the vicinity about 20,000 barrels a day. 20,000 barrels a day times 55 gallons is, you know,
40 gallons in a barrel of oil.
Is it 40? I thought it was 55.
Nope. 40.
So, you know, 40 times 20, that's 800, that's 80,000, 800,000 gallons of oil a day. And it's been going on for 20 days, you know, 1.0.
I'm not buying that number.
So,
at all.
Anyways, it's a big number. There's a lot of oil in the Gulf of Mexico. We can talk about 100 million or 150 million or 200 million, you know, gallons of oil. It's a shitload of oil up there. But Gulf of Mexico is a big place.
Yes, it is.
You know, and literally one Cat 4, you know, would turn most of that stuff into, you know, an oily tinge at most.
Although, you know, we did not have those kinds of spills during Katrina.
That's correct. We didn't. You know, the rigs were fine during Katrina.
Yep.
You know, it's a lot of oil. I don't think, you know, Louisa Ma, the issue as far as China or Korea being held responsible for, I think it's going to be a legal issue. The politicians and the environmentalists and the lefty wackos want this to be a BP issue. So, you know, BP may legally be able to get its butt out of a sling, but politically, you know, they own it, and that's not going to change.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't expect any significant issues for anybody else.
Yep.
Let's move on, staying on an economic theme here.
You betcha.
Because there's plenty of this to go around. The European Union did something over the weekend that nobody expected it to do.
Yeah.
and that was to spend 800 billion euros, you know, on Greece.
Yep.
Unfortunately, they couldn't buy Greece for 800 billion euros,
right.
But it certainly would have been probably a better buy.
Exactly.
You know, a better use of their money at that point.
Yep.
So the EU, but this is what's kind of interesting. I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to this until I read some stuff today. Do you know how much of that 800 billion gets delivered right away?
Probably not a lot.
40.
40?
40 billion.
Huh.
40 billion. The rest of it has to be approved by the EU, by its participating countries, and by the IMF.
Ooh.
So while the whole bunch of guys got around and figured out how to spend 800 billion euros, they actually have to, you know, get permission to do it. And accordingly, in Germany last week, the Germans said nine.
Yeah, nine. Yes, they did.
Nine.
Yeah, yeah. They have, and for those who don't know, Germany had elections in a couple of their, what would be equivalents of states here. And apparently, Chancellor Merkel's
took a big hit. And it's almost exclusive, it appears to have been almost exclusively on this idea of bailing out Greece.
Oh, yeah.
It seems to have been a really big, serious nine to the idea of bailing out Greece. But they've done it, and of course, the markets just thought that was wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think anybody's paying a whole lot of attention to the fact that, you know, what's going to happen over the next 2 weeks is that a whole lot of countries are going to quietly go, yeah, not right now.
Yep. I'm absolutely agreeing with that. I think that the market has not yet digested the fact that Greece doesn't get any hard cash money in any great amounts until more people approve it. And I think that once they digest that, they're going to be raising an eyebrow.
Well, you know, I think it's rather interesting in the fact that the amount of austerity that is being demanded of Greece is just, I mean, in order for Greece to accomplish what they're being told they have to do, Greece has to put its own country, its own people, into a depression equal to or worse than the depression that this country suffered through in the 30s. And with no fiscal way of fixing it. In other words, Greece has to say, okay, we're going to have a depression, and then the government has to sit there with its hands folded in its lap and let it just happen and correct itself when it does. And that's likely to be, well, it's not likely to be a big problem for Greece. It won't even be a matter of civil unrest.
Oh, no.
This will be Greece literally dragging its politicians out into the street and hanging them on the light posts.
I mean, they've already killed three people over there.
Yeah, there's no way in hell that Greece can do what it needs to have done. And the problem was, even if Greece gets all of this money is approved and put into the system, nothing has been done structurally that's going to change, you know.
That's right.
In Greece.
I mean, there is a, and I don't know if recommendation is the right word, but that seems to me like what happened, that Greece privatized their medical system in order to get out.
You know,
yeah, exactly. here we are busily socializing our medicine, and they're being told, you know what, you guys want out of this, you're going to have to privatize it.
I'm sorry. That's like saying, you know, I know your mansion's on fire, but we got the outhouse, you know, covered.
Yeah.
No,
that's good.
I
like
more.
That. Yeah.
The let's segue right into the next little part of that.
Okay.
Speaking of the markets. Okay. So, last Thursday, or was it Friday? Was it on Friday? No, it was Thursday. It's Thursday, right?
Yeah, Thursday.
It was Thursday. Thursday, Victoria and I were at a medical appointment for Victoria. And it was scheduled to start at 2:30. And they had the CNN news in the waiting room, and I was watching it, and not very much was going on. You know, the market was down. They were having, you know, things were going crazy. Yada yada. Went into the medical thing, and I came out, you know, about 15 minutes later to go to the bathroom, and I looked at the news, and I swear to God, you know, Armageddon had appeared in, because it was just going nuts.
Really?
And, you know, people were on the edge of their seat going, you know, market's down 1,000 points. I'm going,
yeah.
1,000 points? 1,000 points. I'm going like, oh, shit.
That's a lot.
Yeah?
Yeah,
and I'm thinking,
yeah.
Like, it's 2:30, it's 2:45. Market closes in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
It's down 1,000 points. Well, I don't care how fast it's going to come back. We're down 6 or 7 for the day.
Yep.
Woo! I went back into the meeting, you know, went back into the appointment and came back out and said, market closed down, you know, what, 300 points, 200 points? I'm like, what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the market doesn't come back 700 points in 15 minutes.
No, it does not.
Well, apparently it did.
Somebody manipulated a bit there, I think.
I spent the entire weekend reading all of my people and all of their analysis of it. And the one analysis that I read that scared the bejesus out of me was the one that suggested that one company at 2:30 withdrew every one of its buy orders. And 15 and 15 minutes later, withdrew every one of its sell orders.
Ow.
And that's it.
God, you'd think it would work the other way around.
No, once all the machines saw that there were no buy orders,
mm-hmm.
you know, the next bid was 1 penny higher than the next bid, which was
zero.
Zero. So the machines bid 1 cent. And that dropped everything down. And then once they put the sell orders, once they yanked the sell orders, you know,
mm-hmm.
everything went back the other way.
Hmm.
Now, I actually posted this link. I don't know if you got it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell you, and you can probably guess, who that one company was.
Hmm. Let me see. Would they be an alphabet?
Two letters.
Oh, two letters. Ooh. Ooh. Well, I'm at C now. I would have figured three letters, but that's okay.
No letters. Two names. Everybody knows them.
Ah, yes. Yes.
I've started calling them Goldman Sachs.
Yeah. Oh, Lord.
Apparently, at the New York Stock Exchange, that's what happened, and the key thing about it was that in that 15 minutes, there were literally thousands of trades going on. So trading didn't stop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Trading continued to happen, and machines were absolutely having a problem with it because, you know, of this thing. Now, you know, there was all kinds of conspiracy theories as to why that was happening, not the least of which was that the Senate was getting ready to vote on, you know, financial reform,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
that little goodie just about, you know, I think financial reform was dead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wednesday or early Thursday last week, I think financial reform was dead, which was a good thing. Most of you people will start going, well, we need financial reform. That financial reform was loved by Wall Street, and anything that Wall Street loves is not good for Main Street.
Yeah.
They got it passed.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And they got it passed. And Goldman Sachs was absolutely for it, lobbying for it. They wanted it. They got it, and the Fed audit that was part of it, as I understand it, was watered down to hell. So, but this was not a trading error. This wasn't a machine error. This was an apparent, you know, thing. Now, do I actually believe it? Well, let me say this. In order for me to believe this, okay, that it actually did it. Okay, that means, in my mind, that means that there is a very significant contingent in New York and Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
That are, in fact, specifically and with intent, desirous of manipulating the economy and the political system to the absolute detriment of the individual American.
Yep. And when you couple that, with the notion that the federal government is floating now, about a basically a takeover of 401ks, that gets pretty worrisome.
Yeah, you worry about, you know, conspiracy theories, but, you know, as they used to say, you know, you're not paranoid if they're actually watching.
Yeah, exactly. They and they are doing that, you betcha.
So, I, you know, I'm not convinced, but I am worried. And as a matter of fact, I think you and I think I've talked about this. I think we've talked about this in a kind of a general way. The idea that on occasion I walk outside on a clear night and stare up into the sky and realize just how big the universe is.
Oh, yeah.
Did I talk to you about my I had a vision. I don't know if I said this. I had a vision a couple of weeks ago. And that's all I can say about it, because it disturbed me greatly. One of the questions that I've always had, and lots of people have, but there's no real good answer for it, is we know that our universe is expanding.
Mm-hmm.
Into what?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, the vision I had, okay, now I'm a believer in the concept of the recurring Big Bang, which is, you know, universe expands, then contracts, you know, contracts back into the Big Bang, which explodes back out and stuff like that. Anyways, the vision I had was of our universe like a marble, okay, and it was growing, expanding, and it was like in this black foam, and as it was expanding, there was a wave front in the foam. Okay, and I was looking up. My perspective was, it was about the equivalent of, you know, the big marbles from the marble games. You know,
diameter. Sure. Yep.
Okay. It was about an inch in diameter, and I was looking down at it as if it was at my feet standing up.
Huh.
Okay?
Huh.
And I recognized that that was our universe expanding into this foam, and I was from that perspective, and all of a sudden I realized, given what I was looking at, which was a universe some 17 billion light years across,
mm-hmm.
Okay, and how small it was in comparison to the rest of the area, okay, I got a vision of me, okay, standing on a seashore on a planet on a solar system in a galaxy, you know, in a small little segment of that marble and going, holy shit, I don't know what it's expanding into, but it's big!
Yeah,
big!
Yeah, whatever it is.
Really, really big!
Yeah.
And that my perspective, thinking that the universe was really big, was just really, really small.
Yeah.
Really, really small.
Yeah.
And I'm relating this because my problem is I started thinking about the EU spending 800 billion euros.
Okay.
And I started thinking about, you know, Barack Obama spending $3.5 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking about the idea that if we took every single penny of net worth of the entire Forbes 400, okay, every single penny of net worth, that it would not be enough money to cover the deficit that's expected this year. We would wipe out the entire net worth of the 400 richest people in the world, and it wouldn't even cover the deficit of this
year. That's a lot of money, isn't it?
And then I started thinking, we're going to pay this back how?
Yeah, right. Yeah, sure. Sure we are. You betcha. Trust me.
I started thinking, no?
No.
CJ, I think I may have brought this up. CJ came up with a thought. She was talking about buying new clothes. And she doesn't like spending a lot of money on clothes. She likes spending a lot of money on clothes. She doesn't like spending a lot of money on a piece of clothes.
Ah, got it.
She'll go to the mall and spend $100 on clothes and come back with 15 or 20 things. Okay? She is a deal finder when it comes to stuff like that.
Ah.
And I asked her about it, and she goes, well, you know, think of it this way. If I wear this a dozen times and I only paid $6 for it, then it only costs me 50 cents every time I wore it.
Hmm, okay.
I want you to think about that for a second.
Yeah,
think
exactly.
Think about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because this is going to tell you how bad our current economic situation is. Okay? Bill, when was the last time you bought a shirt?
Oh, God. Oh, Jesus. A long time ago.
When
When
you bought a shirt.
Yeah.
Okay? What did you average pay for a shirt?
Oh, Jesus. I couldn't even begin to tell you.
30, 40
bucks? I truly can't.
Okay. Let's pretend that you bought a pair of slacks, pair of shoes, and a shirt. Okay?
Okay.
30 bucks for the shoes, 40 bucks for the pants, 35 bucks for the shirt.
Okay.
Okay. 95 bucks. Okay. Well, that's, you know, let's forget the shoes, because you're going to be able to wear those for quite a few times.
Yep.
Shirt and pants. You wear each one of them once a month. Now, you're a typical guy. It's probably more like three times a month. But
yeah. You know. Yeah, right.
Okay. But let's say twice a month, okay, because your wife just won't let you, you know, wear the same clothes too often. Okay,
no.
Twice a month. You know, for you, the average shirt probably lasted 2 years.
Yeah.
Okay. 40 bucks shirt, twice a month, 2 years. That's about 48 wears. That's a buck a trip.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Assuming that, you know, you washed it and cleaned it and you didn't have it, you know, laundered and pressed. A buck. Pants, they last a little bit longer, so maybe a buck. They're a little bit more expensive, maybe.
Okay.
So for an average day for Bill, it costs you about $3 to get dressed and walk out of the house. Before you do anything else, no coffee, no gas, no money. $3 just to get dressed.
Yeah.
Okay? But I think you were probably a pretty frugal guy.
I am that.
Okay. What happens if you get somebody that buys, oh, I don't know, $150 shirt, $250 pair of pants, and wears them on average, 20 times.
Ooh.
Twice a month for less than 2 years.
You got a problem.
Now you're talking about somebody that is spending $50 for getting dressed before he walks out the door.
Mm-hmm.
$50 a day. He has to make $50 a day just to get dressed.
Hmm.
Now, when you start thinking about lots of people spending that kind of money on clothes, or a $50,000 car that they're going to get rid of when it's got 40,000 miles on it, okay, then the average person is probably spending somewhere in the vicinity of, you know, $50 to $80 a day just to live before they actually live.
Mm-hmm.
How
mm-hmm.
long can we keep that up?
Short answer is we can't.
You know, and then when you tie into this idea of spending $10 dollars, you know, of debt over the next 7 or 8 years. You know, add in a couple hundred billion euros, because we're chopping in our 40 billion to it.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just nuts. Yeah, I like the idea of us going into debt for, you know, for Greece unions.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I just find it, you know, I've reached the point where I've begun to look at our dollar bill.
Yeah.
And I'm beginning to think like some other people about how much that dollar bill is worth. And, you know, it's getting to me pretty much in my mind a worthless piece of paper.
Yes, it is. Yep. It is that.
You know, and I'm not talking about, you know, in my head thinking that. I'm beginning to think that in my heart.
Yeah, and that's a big difference.
You know, I'm beginning to look at that and kind of going, ooh, shit.
Yeah.
Something's got to give. Okay, now, I actually desired to make this last item to be our last item.
Oh,
and
I wanted to do it
inside of 5 minutes.
Okay.
So on purpose, I wanted this to be a short discussion.
Okay. We're going to shortly discuss this.
My only question is, will Justice Sotomayor think or respect Elena Kagan's opinion?
Hmm.
Not a Latina woman. Elena Kagan, nominee for Supreme Court Justice of the United States, has exactly to date no judicial experience whatsoever.
None.
That is 1 year less than Clarence Thomas. Who had exactly 1 year of judicial experience before he was nominated to the Supreme Court. She has spent time in a courtroom. Not much.
Not a whole lot, and only as Solicitor General.
My opinion about Elena Kagan is I don't think she's qualified. But I don't think she's not qualified in the same way that Barack Obama is not qualified.
Yeah, no. Those are two different things.
I just don't think, in the big scheme of things, that Elena Kagan was the best that Barack Obama could come up with.
Oh, I'm pretty convinced that this was a appointment out of weakness, not strength.
This was a Harriet Myers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I'm not reading a whole lot of love on the left.
Nope. They're trying pretty desperately to convince each other that she's a good pick.
So, the reason I left it for late.
Yeah.
Is because we're going to have lots of opportunity to talk about it in the future.
Yeah. Yes, we are.
And so, that's why I left it for there. 30
yep.
seconds, dude.
Yep.
Say your shout-outs.
Okay, just me, Pammy, and Arkansas Traveler, and Mama Gurkha, and Louisa Ma, and Hippie Chick, and Kamani, and OC. Hope you listened in, and thank you very much.
Louisa Ma, thank you for all the updates
yes.
on Twitter. That was really,
yep.
really great. Cool. Appreciate it. Thank you very much for that. It's very much appreciated. Bill, you have a good week.
You too. It's
Stay
gonna
dry.
Be a good one. Yep. I'm in sunny California.
Green Room.
Okay.
So this week I hired somebody to cut my grass.
Did you really?
Did they
also run across the surveillance teams?
No, they'd already gotten out of there.
Oh, they already gotten out of there. Okay.
This was my thinking about it.
Yeah.
Last time I cut the grass, it took me 3 hours to cut the grass, and it killed me for the rest of the day.
Oh, that's not good. No.
I didn't get any work done.
Yep.
So, you know, that meant that it cost me, I probably could have gotten one or two petitions done. That means that it cost me, a couple $100.
Yeah.
And this guy, who advertised last year in the neighborhood, put some
mm-hmm.
signs up in the side, along the side of the road, for doing it. What he did this spring was he went around to every house, and for each house came up with a price and put it in the mailbox.
Oh, how cool. Good for him.
Smart marketing dude.
For her, or whatever.
Is he? Smart marketing dude. One piece of paper with his, Mike's grass cutting, here's
yep.
the phone number. For
yep.
your property,
yep.
The cost would be, and then it was a
X.
line, and then he'd written his
yep.
$30.
Yep.
And so I said, today is Tuesday. Yesterday morning I got up, took care of business, came down to the office around, 9:30,
uh-huh.
and called him. And he knew right away where the house was, and he said that he'd be right over. He'd do it right away.
Yeah.
And 20 minutes later, there was a lawnmower running around my backyard.
Whoa. Good job.
One of the big sitting, commercial grade ones.
Yep, 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 yep.
And he spent an hour and a half.
Really?
He cut, then he pulled out a push mower and did some trimming. Then he took out a trimmer and trimmed out everything. It took him about an hour and a half. I paid him $30. It was not a great job.
No.
But it was just fine, and it didn't cost me a minute of my time.
Exactly.
To worry about.
Exactly.
And I got two petitions done.
I was just going to say, you made more money working than you did mowing the lawn.
And, I gave him his money, and he was really happy. And, he popped back into his 2008 F-250 pulling behind this wonderfully nice silver enclosed, equipment hauler, that
mm-hmm.
he had two riding mowers in there, a push mower and his weed whacker, cat power
mm-hmm.
weed whacker.
Yep.
And off he went down his merry way. Now,
cool.
I bring all that up because, of course, it was more efficient for me to do that.
Yep, absolutely.
More cost-effective for me to do that.
Yep.
And
yes, it was.
This is the kicker, because it's really important.
Yeah.
Really, really important. Beyond the fact that he did excellent customer service, because he came right out and got it done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He has Down syndrome.
Really?
High functioning.
Yeah.
But absolutely.
I'll be darned. How great. How good. Yeah, that's great.
Wow. And I look at some of the people that tell me that this country sucks, that people are dying and starving and can't get jobs, and I'm sitting there looking at him and I'm kind of going, he only worked an hour and a half on my yard, but let me tell you, that was an hour and a half busting his ass.
Oh, yeah.
And while it was. And guess what? The end of next week, I'm going to call him again.
Absolutely.
Bill, your phone has faded to almost nothing.
Is this any better?
There you are.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm back. I think I got my mouth a little bit away from it.
So, anyways, So there's two parts to that. being efficient and, you know, spreading the wealth. And, you know, when you really want it, there's certainly a way to make money in this country.
Oh, absolutely. There's two truisms that go around my town. One is, everybody that wants a job has got one. And in my town, that's true. If you aren't working, it's because you don't want to work, not because there aren't jobs available. And the second truism is, you got to make your own job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's what this guy did.
Yeah. CJ.
Yes.
Was confirmed on Sunday.
How cool.
Episcopalian, are you Roman
right?
Catholic? Are you Roman Catholic or Protestant?
No, I'm not.
Don't care to share, eh?
No, I'm not. I'm just your old basic Christian.
Okay. For those of you that know, in most Christian churches, there's a process of confirmation, which is you are treated as an adult, and you are repeating for yourself your baptismal vows.
Yes.
Basically, is what it is. It's done in lots of different ways, but for the most part, what you're doing is you are standing up and proclaiming your baptismal vows that were done for you by your baptismal sponsors.
Yes.
There was 9 young people that were confirmed into the church.
Really?
On Sunday.
Cool. Now this is Episcopalian, right?
We're at Lutherans. Okay,
Lutheran. Okay.
Protestant. But you know, she didn't want to make it a big deal, but it was kind of a big deal, and so it was done. One of the things that we did was, as an agnostic, I don't pray, or I don't necessarily participate in the service.
Mm-hmm,
I stand where
mm-hmm.
I'm supposed to, sit when I can, and I don't kneel. I don't get communion. Generally speaking, unless there's one hymn that I really, really, really like a whole lot, and I sing that hymn. And it just drives CJ crazy because it happens only about once a year.
Gee, they don't rotate through their hymnal very much there, do they?
No, so it's just one that I like. And the problem is when I was in the Fundy Church a long time ago, it was sung as a 4-part harmony in our church.
Ooh, yeah, I love those.
And that kind of thing is just when it's done, and we, with 200 people. And seeing the 4-part harmony and everybody singing things like that are just amazing. It's just
amazing. They are. Yep.
It just gives you goosebumps. I don't care who you are. It just gives you goosebumps and stuff like that.
Yep.
Anyway, I really like that hymn, and I will sing that hymn even there, and everybody get kind of surprised. When are you actually singing that hymn? Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. I really like it.
You know what that hymn is? I absolutely know what that hymn is.
Yep.
And do you understand the words? I said, absolutely I understand the words. But do you believe the words? No, but I really like the song.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
I really like it. Anyways, in order to do the communion, the way they do it in this church was, it's a laying on of hands.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For those that know. But they also want the parents, the mentor, the confirmation mentor, and if you have baptismal sponsors, then they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the pastors and the head of the church, laity. So anyways, the kids get 20 hands put on their hands. Anyway, I had to go up, and of course, each kid is done individually. And it's up in front of the church, so, I kind of had to do it too. So I had to say the laying on of hands prayer. And I thought about it, and I'm going like, well, just say it. You can just mouth the words. And I'm like, no, I actually mean them.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, not for
CJ,
you, but for CJ. Sure.
Right, for CJ. For CJ, I actually mean them. You know.
Yeah.
Those are things that are important. So.
Yeah.
It was rather an interesting thing. Victoria
Oh, cool.
Was a blubbering fool, so was half the church.
Yeah.
You know, the pastor did the sermon about, you know, the confirmation was done after the sermon. But she's up there doing the sermon part, you know, and she's, you know, she's saying this to all these wonderful things and stuff like that. She couldn't get through her sermon without crying.
Oh, really?
You know, and as soon as she started crying, half the women in the church started crying.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And by that point, Victoria was just a blubbering, you know,
yeah.
And I'm sitting there looking at these people going like, oh, my God, this
is
terrible. So she finishes, and we have the confirmation, you know, and there's, you know, half the congregation is crying at the end of it. I'm sitting there going, ay vey.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was very nice. CJ got lots of compliments.
Good.
You know, she held her. She was very poised. It was altogether a really good thing.
Oh, that's so super.
Well, you know,
but that's not the only biggie thing that happened with her.
Didn't I say this to anybody?
No, on Twitter you did. You didn't say anything about it on the air. I was waiting for you to say something about it on the air.
Really? I didn't say anything about it on the air?
You said nothing about her having two pictures selected to be published. Nothing.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
to clarify,
yeah.
A woman that's putting together a book. She's out of England. Is putting together a book that'll be published later this year. And she has asked, and CJ has yes, and we have given permission. Two of CJ's photos will be used in the book.
Isn't that so cool? That is just so cool.
It is so cool.
Yeah.
So the name of the book is Faces in Places.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And it's unusual faces, unusual places to see a face.
Ah, okay.
And one of them for CJ, one of them is a cupcake. And I still don't know what the other thing is.
Really?
I really don't know what it is.
Huh.
It looks like a whale with its mouth open is what it looks like.
Ah, okay. Okay.
So anyways, I wonder.
What?
You know what? I want to see if I can put them up on Twitter.
Ooh. There's a twit pic.
As a twit pic.
I don't know.
What's her name? That's not her name. Looking to see Jesus stuff. See what's in there. Because one of the, you know, the pictures are just, that's it, Jody. Man, I can't do it like that. No, the photos are here, but it might take me forever to find them. You know, and I've turned off the external drive. I'm not gonna fight with it. Anyways, maybe I'll get them up and see if I can get them up.
Cool.
Both pictures. Anyways, but yes, CJ will have two photos in the book published later on this year. Congratulations, my dear, dear daughter. It will be, really, you know, despite the previous things, it will be the first commercial publication of her pictures.
Ah, that is so good.
It is great. She is so excited. And she was saying, you know, think about all the things that had to happen in order for her to reach that point.
Yep.
And she went back and she said, you had to give me a camera. Like, years ago. You know, and she went through all these things that had to have happened before she could have gotten to that point, including, you know, wanting colored paper for the cupcake and only having white. And because the cupcake was chocolate, instead of yellow chocolate, like what she wanted to make, she actually made chocolate. And, you know, the two chips that made the eyes had to come up with the right thing, and she had to overfill it in order for the cupcake to have a crack in it for the mouth. And then she had to, right before she bit into it, stop and realize that there was a face there, and then take the picture, and then realize she needed a background of the picture, and then put that picture up to Flickr, and then, you know, I mean, she went through this 20-minute thing about all the things that had to happen to get to that particular point. She goes, and all I think is, any one of those things, if I hadn't done it, you know, I wouldn't be here. And I'm like, yeah, I understand.
Just really another way of saying we stand on the shoulders of giants.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
We are the end result of our lives.
Yep, of everything that went before us.
You know, and I honor that. I think it's immensely important.
Oh, yeah.
I have no desire to live it.
No. But to learn from it, to take whatever the lessons are that you come away with from it, absolutely appropriate. Absolutely.
Tom. All right.
Yep.
What did you want to cover? Have you had dinner tonight?
Actually, I did. Well, I had most of it. I had most of it. I was still chewing when I heard the last of the bumper music.
We had leftover roast chicken tonight.
Ah, cool. We had some beef stroganoff with asparagus on the side.
That's gross.
Yeah. No, on the side. I mean, you know, it wasn't like all mixed together.
Oh, speaking about asparagus.
Yeah.
Yesterday, when we get a roast chicken, we go to a place that, you know, has a roast chicken. They also have a salad bar. So what I usually do is I get, you know, heavily laden salads, and then the roast chicken is, you know, the extra part.
Right.
And for me, I like to get, it's about a, you know, by the time it's done, it's about a pound. I get a little bit of lettuce on the bottom, and then I usually add some cucumbers, some turkey, a bunch of cheese, and hard-boiled egg.
Oh, yeah. Love hard.
And then I add cheese and raisins to the top of it and garbanzo beans. I love garbanzo beans.
Yeah, garbanzo beans are good. Yes, they are.
So, basically, it's, you know, the garbanzo beans, cheese, meat, eggs, and raisins on top of my lettuce. I don't use dressing because it's very flavorful anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
Victoria has, you know, cheese and raisins and egg and salad on hers and some tuna.
Okay. Yep.
Tuna
and hard-boiled
anyways,
eggs go well together.
Yeah, we went to the salad bar, and CJ likes the romaine lettuce, and I don't really care for it a whole lot. I liked iceberg lettuce, and they were out of iceberg, so we had to wait for them to put some iceberg out. And the guy goes, you know, he's starting to put stuff out, and I said, thanks a whole lot, I really liked iceberg. And he goes, you know, there's virtually no nutritional value in iceberg lettuce. And I'm sitting there like going, it's grass. Exactly what new nutritional value do you think it has?
Exactly.
You know, I said, I don't eat lettuce for nutritional value. I said, lettuce holds the egg, the garbanzo beans, the cheese, you know, and the turkey.
Yeah.
I said,
yeah, exactly.
You know, this is roughage to go with my protein, you know.
You know what you should have asked him?
What
you should have asked him is, oh, by the way, that romaine lettuce recall for E. coli, are you guaranteeing me there's no E. coli in this?
Well, CJ went, Well, she looked at him and she goes, well, if the iceberg doesn't have, you know, much nutritional value, does that mean that the romaine has more? And he goes, well, yeah. And I go, yeah, dark green grass.
Exactly.
You know, and I, you know, for the rest of the, you know, for the next 15 minutes while we were in the store, you know, I practically wandered around that store. People look at me crazy, cackling, nutritional value of iceberg lettuce. I couldn't believe it. This has very little nutritional value.
Yeah.
Oh, shit! It's lettuce!
Exactly.
I eat it for the water!
Yeah.
He was so serious!
Oh, I know. They
this
get that
not
way.
Good for you. And I'm like, yeah.
You know, I get that story a lot, too, and it's kind of like, you know, this is a taste I like. It's a taste I grew up with. It's a taste that I like. Leave me alone. God.
You know, I'm not eating shoe leather.
Exactly.
More nutritional value in the lettuce than shoe leather.
Yeah.
I don't need those kinds of people in my life. I really don't. I spend most of the time laughing my ass off and the rest of the time wanting to slap them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Oh, man.
So TJ and I have had, like, a really good couple, you know, good weekend or so. You know, interesting shit going on.
Yeah, well.
So, other than that, nothing else new going on.
Yeah. When are you coming out?
Nothing has changed at this point. You know, we're still aiming for the end of June.
Ah, okay. Yep.
So,
And V's not on dialysis yet, but maybe by that time.
She had her tests done last week.
Yeah.
Went to renal last week.
Yeah, yeah.
And she had her tests. And the three components, the three numbers that we watched very carefully,
mm-hmm.
All showed improvement over last month.
Well, well, well.
So, for those of you that know about kidney function, her GFR went from 12 to 13.
Cool.
Which is, you know, better than 12 to 11.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
So,
well, whatever she or you are doing, keep it up.
Yeah, creatinine was down nicely, potassium was down, and GFR was up. Those are all good.
Those are all good things.
That's the direction we want to go. We don't expect any of those numbers to get significantly better than they are, but the change of direction was happy to see.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, good. I'm, you know, that could mean that you guys are going to make it through June. I mean, you know, middle of May? You got a month and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ask me how ready we are.
No, I know how ready you are.
As a percentage of 1 to 100, 100 being ready, as soon as we get to one, I'll let you know.
Yeah, exactly. Jesus. Oh, God.
And Victoria wanted to have participate in the garage sale this week. Remember,
really?
I told you the homeowner association always picks the worst day?
Yeah, yeah.
God. Thursday was kind of okay except for the wind. It was cold. It was raw. Friday was miserable. Most people closed up their garage sales because it was just miserable weather.
Yeah.
And, you know, Saturday, at 10 o'clock Saturday morning, it was 36 degrees.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
So, Saturday, although it was sunny and windy, 36 degrees, we actually had a wind chill in the 20s.
Yeah, exactly.
10 o'clock Saturday morning. That's all I have. We did not do a garage sale this weekend.
Uh-huh. Oh, So what are you going to do? Pack it all up and have a garage sale here in California?
Oh, no, 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 no. None,
no, 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 no,
very
no.
little's coming with us. Very little's coming with us.
Okay.
I did not have much work last week, so I was able to actually start getting some things starting to work up. This office that I'm speaking out of right now is my office, but it's also part office.
So I was actually working
on old files and such like that for Victoria's office, kind of getting them ready and such. So,
okay.
You know, I'm trying to get some stuff done.
Good. Good, good.
And trying to stay off Twitter as much as I can.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not working real well.
Yeah, well, you know, what can I tell you? I'm on it.
And he didn't have to bend my arm very much.
Yeah.
But I will be on one of the committees, and therefore I will be the head of one of the committees. Therefore,
really?
A member of the executive committee of the American Conservative Party.
Cool.
Provided everybody votes for me.
Okay. I will do that. And is that going to be tomorrow night?
That's going to be tomorrow night.
I got it. Okay. Okay.
What committee I'm going to be on?
Pardon?
Do you know what committee I'm going to be on?
No.
Rules.
Uh-huh. Okay. Rules is a good committee.
Good place for me to be.
Yeah.
Keeps
me I'm on policy. I am not the head of it, but I am on policy. At least I don't think I'm the head of it. I hope I'm not
people,
the head of it.
I keep thinking, you saw the movie Independence Day?
Yeah.
Professor Dr. Orkin. He played Data on Star Trek.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Where he says to the president, they don't let us out very much. That's kind of how I feel about the party, you know.
Uh-huh.
We like Tracy, but they don't like me being in the front door too much.
Yeah.
That's okay. I understand that completely.
Uh-huh.
You know, as a spokesperson for the American Conservative Party, most people would prefer that I'm seen and not heard.
Yeah. Okay.
I think I'm a pretty good spokesperson for the American Conservative Party.
Well, I think you are. You know, you just tend to be a little bull in a china
purist.
Shop. That's all.
Purist.
Yeah. Well, no, it isn't even that. It's just that you somehow forget courtesy and etiquette.
Are you saying that I have no tact?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying you don't use it a lot. Oh, God.
Fortunately, I don't need to.
Well, that's true. That's because we don't let you out a lot.
We don't let me out a lot.
God.
All right, let's call it a night.
Okay, guy. Tracy, have a really great week.
I'm planning on it. You too, Bill.
All righty.
Stay warm.
Good night.
Stay dry.
You
See
betcha.
You next week.
Bye-bye.
Good night, everyone.